Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. It's been well over a year since the Ferguson Commission completed its work reviewing conditions that led to unrest after the shooting death of Michael Brown. The commission came up with 189 calls for action to resolve a long list of racial inequities, then turned responsibility for advancing the recommendations to a new organization, Forward Through Ferguson. Forward Through Ferguson has two new board co-chairs, Rebecca Bennett and Zachary Boyers. They join me in studio. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
I'm glad you could find the time because I know you're very busy, both of you. We talked off the air about how much time you're devoting to this project. And Rebecca, it's a lot of time, isn't it?
It's a lot of time right now, several hours a day.
Really? And what are you doing during those several hours?
Well, right now we're in the midst of leadership change, and so we are spending a lot of time thinking about who can help carry us into the future.
All righty. Zach, can you handle your day job and all of this?
Absolutely, of course. The reality is I like to look for convergence where, you know, there's a relationship between the work that we do in the day job and also the work that we want to do as it relates to civic engagement and in community.
Yeah, I'd like to get into more detail on that a little bit later, and we will. But first, let me begin with a quote from your predecessors. It reads like this: "We have embarked upon an experiment in inclusive democracy." The word experiment, Rebecca, caught my eye. What is your read on that?
Well, it's an indication that we're still learning, that we haven't gotten this thing right, and that imagination is as important and essential in our progress as action. And so I think the experiment sort of gives us a safe way to enter into territory to do work that, quite honestly, most communities in this country haven't done well. And yet the democratic experiment is so important to imagine a country where people are government is of the people, by the people, and for the people, right? That idea that citizens are governors and not subjects, living into the full promise of that is part of our work.
So, Zach, it sounds to me like there aren't a lot of restrictions that you kind of, I hate to use this phrase, but I will, you kind of make it up as you go along.
I think there's a great opportunity for us to innovate here. And I think as an organization with the responsibility of carrying on, really, the work that was begun by and convened by the Ferguson Commission, it gives us an opportunity to really advance against our purpose in a very different way, a differentiated way, candidly, than other organizations have been built to do. Mm. I think it is an experiment in part to make it up as we go, but really also to stay true to what were the underpinning core values and principles that the Ferguson Commission really adhere to and that we intend to.
The principal areas of those the calls to action that the commission came up with are dealing with policing, municipal court reform, education, healthcare access, predatory lending, and more. How are we doing in these areas and trying to progress beyond where we were? Rebecca?
Well, that's a good question. We're still trying to figure it out, Don. I mean, mm-hmm. part of the beauty of the commission's work is that it was so comprehensive and big. Mm-hmm. 189 calls to action, 47 signature priorities is a lot to track. And so we're in the process of figuring out how to track it. I think there are some places where we're seeing some forward momentum and other spaces where we're not seeing as much progress as we'd like. So the Justice for All space, for example, is a space that really sort of catalyzed all that we're seeing in terms of the killing of Mike Brown, but where we haven't seen the kind of major movement yet that we would like to see. In other parts of our community or other parts of the report, when we talk about youth at the center, we're seeing some really exciting work around child development accounts out of the treasurer's office and with WashU and others that are at the table. Or if we're talking about economic opportunity, we're seeing promising results in terms of changing minimum wage and other things that we propose. So I think there's some places where we see some progress and other places where we still have lots of heavy lifting to do.
I would just add, Don, that you know, if you look back a year ago, the notion of applying a racial equity lens to all kinds of things that we do in our region would have been new to many. And the reality is that is becoming more and more relevant, and I think more and more picked up as a way to look at the work that we're doing and the things that we're doing. And so to Rebecca's point, I think we have an opportunity to coordinate and convene some of that and leverage the work happening, but also to fill in the voids where the work is not advancing.
You know, we've discussed this a number of times on the program. A lot of people, primarily the white community, caught by surprise by what happened in Ferguson and the revelation following the conditions that led to a lot of the aftermath of the Michael Brown shooting. But it came, Rebecca, as no surprise to the community that was living in Ferguson and elsewhere in the county and elsewhere in the country.
Right. I think the truth is, Don, that we live in the same world, but we don't share the same reality.
No.
Realities are as unique as fingerprints, right? And so all of the conditions and all of the institutional supports or interference that we get, all of these things sort of make up and constitute the realities that we experience, the actions that we take and that others take by, for, or against us. So, you know, it's not surprising to me that there are many in our community who have not experienced much of the hardship that got outlined and presented in the commission's report.
Were you born and raised in the St. Louis area?
I'm a D.C. native, so that should let you know I've got some passion for this policy stuff, right? I was, you know, sort of born and bred with that. But I've been in this community for 20 years, so St. Louis is my home.
Well, just out of curiosity, when you came to St. Louis from D.C., what was your impression of what the racial attitudes were here?
I will tell you that having lived in a number of places, I was surprised by the level of polarization that was here, polarization and social isolation. And surprised is probably an understatement, right? So I was disappointed. It's the kind of thing that gets people not to stay here. At the same time, I was also heartened by the extreme warmth of the people here at St. Louis, right? Sort of the Midwestern embrace. And so both of those things are realities, right? The social isolation and the deep sense of community in place.
Traffic a lot better here than it is in D.C.
Absolutely. Not the same kind of density at all.
Zach, are you a locally born?
No, but I, like Rebecca, I've been here actually 23 years. So I moved here from Boston actually 23 years ago.
I wonder if when you came, you had any sense of the polarization that has characterized this this place for a long time.
Yes, I did. I mean, it is a problem that exists, of course, throughout the country and in cities all around America. But the reality of segregation here in this city and different realities, differently lived experiences, I think is remarkable. And I think is actually a special challenge for us as we're trying to do this work. I think it's daunting. So I would just say, yes, I think it's become ever more clear as someone involved in economic and community development. I think I might have believed that all boats would rise if we would continue to invest in our region. But I think it takes a different kind of intentionality and to undo what we've done.
Given the work that you're doing and the number of issues that you have to confront, what's going to happen in terms of what recommendations you might come up with? What then?
Do you mean me personally in terms of our work, or at Ford Through Ferguson?
Once Ford Through Ferguson moves on down the road and has its own thoughts about things that should be done, what's going to happen with it?
I believe that, to Rebecca's point, that the commission's work was so significant and comprehensive that we do know that we can address the disparities that exist and that continue to persist. It really does require a level of collective action, I would say, that we haven't seen in this region. It is not for Ford Through Ferguson alone to hold. It is, in fact, in partnership and really in radical collaboration with other organizations, individuals, corporations, and government entities to decide that this is a problem we want to solve. Mm-hmm. I do believe that we've got the path laid out for us. We've just got to decide we want to go down it.
And Don, you know, this is a long process. I mean, so I don't think we necessarily need another set of priorities. We've got 189 priorities that are staring us in the face and that will take us generations to be able to implement and take action on. The work in the meantime, though, is for us to help build the kind of civic capacity and community capacity to collectively do the work.
Yeah.
Because no single institution has the resources, the authority, the moxie, right, to execute by itself. And so in that way, we are a region that's underdeveloped and needs support in developing those kind of muscles.
You know, over the years, there have been any number of reports dealing with some of the issues that that you're confronting right now. And I have to say that in almost every case that I can think of, these reports were brought out, they were given a lot of attention, a lot of publicity, and then they were put in a drawer and forgotten. A lot of people might be thinking, well, here we go again. What can you do to reassure them?
Well, so let me say this. I shared that same sentiment early on in the process as someone who even worked with the Ferguson Commission in its efforts. And my initial response before everything got started was, oh, a report, another report, right? Yeah. What will it mean? And in fact, I got stopped by a man in the barbershop who said, you're working with that commission, aren't you? Uh-huh. And what are they doing? You know, what's going to really happen? So I've heard it in a number of ways, but I will say to you what I said to him. I do have hope, and yet I work beyond my hope. I mean, what makes reports actually come alive is that people do the work to execute them. And I think if we and our 130 partners in this region continue to focus on making sure that markets and systems function equally well for people, whatever their color is, then we won't see this be a report that, you know, dies and lays flat, but one that animates and excites a region.
I would just add to what Rebecca's saying. You know, 42 Ferguson is unique in that I don't believe there's an organization of its kind that has been charged with taking that report and, in fact, keeping it alive and catalyzing its implementation. That is new. That is a new idea, and we have an opportunity. And frankly, I think a responsibility to this region to keep it alive, keep it fresh, make it happen.
Well, if I may say so, you're working with Focus St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And Focus St. Louis, not to diminish anything that organization has done, but I can recall in years past where Focus has done a lot of work in this area. And another one of those reports that got tossed in the drawer.
Right. I think part of what this shows is that this is an iterative process. If we think that we're going to sort of wave a magic wand and all of a sudden things are going to be perfect, then this is the wrong work to be in. This is something that we have to try again and again and again and again. And in fact, the language that we use is a culture of trying, right? When we stop trying, we're really in trouble. But if we continue to iterate, to learn, to improve, to get better, to reflect, to examine, to push, to challenge, then I think we'll be sure to see some progress in sustained ways over time.
I have to take a break momentarily, but Zach, let me come to you with regard to the relationship with Focus. I'm not sure everybody understands what that is. How do you work with the Focus St. Louis?
You know, Focus is a regional partner. We are not directly tied to Focus in any particular or sort of formalized way.
I thought you were. I thought that the two were kind of interlocked.
We are not. I think there was the possibility of that, but I think all sides sort of agreed in some respect that this work and the work of carrying the recommendations forward really needed to exist on its own and have some independence, and also, to your point earlier, the opportunity to innovate and experiment in order to get this done.
Have to take a break. Let's do that now. We'll come back and continue this conversation. We're talking about the organization Forward Through Ferguson with the two recently announced co-chairs of that organization, Rebecca Bennett and Zach Boyers. Back to continue, as I say, and also take your calls and comments. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Rebecca Bennett and Zach Boyers, co-chairs of Forward Through Ferguson. Obviously, at some point, some of the things that you're going to be dealing with and talking about and recommend are going to have to go through the legislative process. Are you confident that our legislature is there and ready to act positively on what you might be suggesting and that Governor Greitens would be supportive? Rebecca?
I think what I'd like to say is that I'm hopeful. I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm confident yet. Certainly, much of what we're talking about represents a significant departure from the status quo. And so our sort of issues haven't necessarily and or historically been readily embraced by the state legislature. And so I am hopeful, though, that this new political leadership will see the merit and the value of really working to ensure that markets and systems function well for all of us, particularly here in the state of Missouri. Let me say that I will give them the opportunity to do so and welcome their assistance and support.
I would just add it's such a critical opportunity for the St. Louis region to come together to acknowledge again what is inequitable in our region and in our state and work together to help move legislative agenda from a policy perspective. And that is the other thing that does, I think, distinguish Forward Through Ferguson and its approach to these issues, which is it does have a very specific policy And systems approach to the work.
Yeah, this is relatively early on in your whole association with the organization. But let's just take one thing that has gotten a lot of attention and some legislative action, and that is the municipal court reform. Happy? I think we're where we should be, or do we need to look at that again?
No, I mean, you know, our auditor, Nicole Galloway, recently came out with her report, right, her audit on Ferguson Municipal Courts. And I think that report sort of explicitly states and provides evidence for the fact that we aren't nearly as far along as we need to be and that we're still seeing systems and structural failure within our court systems. Mm-hmm. So we are certainly not at a point where we can say that our court reform efforts have been sufficient, right? I mean, we are still dealing with sort of debtor's prisons here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so to the extent that so many in our community find themselves destabilized, their families destabilized, their houses and their lives destabilized, their jobs lost because of the ways in which we mete out fees and fines and the ways in which we convict and confine people as a consequence of that, then we still got a lot of heavy lifting to do. So, no, we're not pleased with where things are.
Okay. I want to get to our audience with their questions and comments that they have in just a second. But Zach, let me just turn to you quickly for what sort of a timetable are we looking at? I mean, do you guys have an agenda, a calendar of any sort that you're working with?
Well, as Rebecca mentioned earlier, we are in at the moment focusing on replacing our lead catalyst, Nicole Hudson, as you know. Recently took a position in Mayor Crewson's administration, which we are thrilled about, but also that leaves us in a place for searching for her replacement. So we're excited about that. Over the next number of months, we are engaging in what is our first strategic planning process. And so we expect to complete that and also complete the search for our new permanent lead catalyst by the end of 2017. I think as we move into 2018, what you will see and what the region will see is a more intentional focus on specific calls to action, policy work, and some systems change that we can point to.
Do you have a go ahead, Rebecca.
Well, the other thing that I was going to say, big picture, we are asking St. Louis to imagine with us 2039, really. So we're talking about 25 years from the killing of Mike Brown, that we think that this is generational work, and we think it takes a generation to be able to see major, substantive, lasting transformation in this community. So not quick work, long timeline.
It means you've got to reach out to today's young people who will be, and 25 years from now, not quite so young, but they'll have to play an important role.
Oh, absolutely. And they've already played an important role. I mean, I think what we see, the sort of energy and momentum and dynamism that has come out of the Ferguson uprising has largely been driven by young people. And so the reason why we're here is not only the death of a young man, but the activism of young people. And so cultivating that pipeline of young leadership is precisely what we ought to be doing.
I have a tweet here I'd like to get you to respond to, and it reads, "The Ferguson Commission's calls to action were all a part of a wish list for a utopian society." How does that ring with you, Zach?
I don't know that it's utopian. I think it's a pathway to a just society and a place where race doesn't determine the outcomes that people have to live with. And so, I understand, and I think it's an important thing to be able to vision what it looks like to be in a place that actually does achieve racial equity, and we've got a long way to go, but we need to spend the time to work on it.
Rebecca, do you think that tweet suggests that we are living in a dystopian society?
I think that tweet suggests that there is still a great degree of cynicism that we have to encounter and overcome as we do this work. Let me just say for the record that I don't do fairy tales, right? That many of us are, too many of us are living in nightmares, and so the work that we have to do really is to say, yes, the depth and breadth of this is very comprehensive. Yes, it seems like too much. But how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? Mm-hmm. That's the only way I know to do it. And as long as we put the work and the effort into doing that, we'll seek progress.
Is your work complicated, Rebecca, by today's national mood? I mean, clearly there's a polarization in this country that is palpable. And it looks to a lot of people like at the top there's not a lot of support for inclusion. And togetherness, if I may.
Yeah, I would agree that the political state of affairs has certainly complicated things for many of us. And yet and still, you never waste a good crisis, right? And what do I mean by that? I mean that this is an opportunity for us to mobilize and to galvanize the base, right? People who have to live in communities that don't work as well for them. And so, and that's all of us, quite frankly, because to the extent that these things aren't working for some of us, it has a negative and deleterious consequence for the vibrancy of our community as a whole. And so my hope is that from sort of the sort of political division that we see, that we will see even more engaged community and civic actors.
Yeah, I was just going to add, you know, it's not just the moral imperative. If you're sitting here in St. Louis today and you're looking at the trajectory of our region, I can't imagine that you're feeling particularly thrilled. And I think getting real about not only what we tolerate from a social and moral perspective, but also what we need to do from an economic development, future of our region perspective, the fact is that there is alignment. And so to me, that's an opportunity for us to show up differently. And think about it differently.
Go ahead, Rebecca.
Yeah, I just wanted to add about that. I want to talk about the sort of two communities that we live in. I mean, we can never have a great St. Louis when one out of every two Black children in the city lives in poverty. We can never have a great St. Louis when 70% of African American households in this community live on less than $35,000 a year. That's households, not individuals. So when we start talking about how great our community can be, and we look at a significant piece of our population that has been systemically denied access to the kind of opportunities that make life work, we have really got to do some rethinking and some reexamining, and we can't afford that. So everything else that we want for our community really requires us to do this work.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the For the Sake of All report a little bit earlier, and the disparity in longevity.
Absolutely.
As much as 18 years between adjacent zip codes when one is poor and the other is not.
Right.
That's fairly dramatic.
Right. I mean, what could you do with an extra 20 years of life? Right. I mean, this is real.
I'm hopeful.
This is real stuff.
Absolutely is. Let's get some listeners into the conversation. We'll start with Ron, who is calling from Ferguson. Ron, go ahead, but make it quick, if you would, please.
I want to say that all the points that they made are valid, but they're going to need people to help enact it. I believe that the name should have been changed to Missouri Forward. Ferguson is the most diverse community in the entire state of Missouri. And to put that label on them by themselves, to me, limits your participation, because most people are going to say that's a Ferguson problem. And the last thing I'd like to say is the Ferguson Uprising helped elect Donald Trump because it wasn't handled properly by the so-called leaders of this movement. And lastly, there needs to be some emphasis on what individuals should be doing for themselves.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you for the call. Anyone like to begin to respond to him?
I mean, I would agree just for certain this is not a Ferguson issue. This is a regional issue, and arguably I think it's absolutely a national issue as well. So our charge is really to address the issues of racial equity for the region and also I think honor what has happened in Ferguson and the way that catalyzed the work that we're doing now.
Yeah, so I agree with the caller that we have a bigger scope. I agree with the caller that much of what came out of the unrest ended up being interpreted in ways that had a lot of people disconnect from what we were talking about. And I agree that individual action is necessary. What I will say is that while individual action is necessary, it is not sufficient. So while I could tell my beautiful young children, yes, you need to study hard, and yes, you need to apply yourself, and yes, you need to, you know, have the character, virtue, values, and academic prowess needed, the reality is that even if they do all of those things, they're likely to have educational outcomes that are not on par with their white counterparts. So part of what we're saying, the reason why we sort of shifted the narrative from individual action isn't because it's unessential. It certainly is essential. It's just not sufficient. Mm. If we don't talk about the behavior of markets and systems and structures, then everything that individuals do will be constrained by things that are beyond their control. And that is unfair and un-American.
Is the way Ferguson was handled the reason for Donald Trump's election as president?
I certainly think that there are many in the community who used it as fodder, who interpreted it and twisted it in ways that really advanced further racial polarization and that made the case that really what you needed to do was sort of center whiteness again, come back to the center there, that there's chaos out on the borders. And there will always be people who seek to twist and contort things to suit their purposes. We can't control that, but we stay on message.
Zach, of all the issues that you have to deal with, the 189-plus, is there one that stands out? Is there one that has a priority that would have to be you're both reacting interestingly to this. You get the gist of my question. Zach, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I guess I think the short answer is no, there's not one. I think if there's anything, the work of the commission, the most valuable work that the commission did was bring the community's voice into this conversation and to illuminate the ways in which all of these issues individually are to Rebecca's language, are required but not sufficient. They are related. They are creating systems that that lead to disparities that we can't overcome. So that we must overcome, and they are related. You cannot take one, pick one off, and think you're going to solve the problem. And I think that's both the challenge and also the elegance of the commission report.
Rebecca, you had a big old smile on your face when I started to ask that question.
So I'm going to tell you, this is one of the beautiful things about having co-chairs, right? Because we have different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So philosophically, I agree with you, Zach. Mm-hmm. Practically, the one that I'd like to see us really lift up to sustain the work is to fund a racial equity fund. Right. So one of the challenges there, one of the calls to action was to really put some money into this work, $25 million racial equity fund. And I think the kind of training people need, the kind of support they need, the kind of community engagement that is required and centering of community in decision making requires the resources to do it. So for me, that's a way of helping to sustain the work.
I'm not sure everybody knows what the racial equity fund is.
Right. And so really, it's a desire to pool money together in a way that allows us to do capacity building around racial equity for institutions and organizations and for communities, and that allows us to be able to track how well we as a region are really doing on improving the function of markets and systems and policies for people.
Where does the money come from?
I would like it to come from all of us, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have a magic piggy bank that's got $25 million in it, but...
Are you looking for government support?
It would be nice to have government support. I don't think that would be sufficient. I think we'd need support from the philanthropic sector, from the private sector, and from the community and public at large to say racial equity is a priority for our region now and tomorrow.
Just a couple of minutes left, and I promised Zach that I would ask this question early on. That is in regard to your organizations. Rebecca, the founder and principal of Emerging Wisdom, a social enterprise that advances personal, organizational, and social transformation. Zach, chairman and CEO of the U.S. Bank Corp Community Development Corporation. What do your organizations do to help and participate in all of this?
Well, so I have had the opportunity to engage community for the 20 years that I've been here around big systems change, areas that are too big for any single institution to address and resolve by themselves. But you need lots of people to work on them, and that's youth violence or community development or poverty or the Ferguson Commission itself, really. So I get to bring together multiple stakeholders and community members to address and resolve these sort of big problems. That's what I do every day, but more importantly, to help these same stakeholders really imagine the healed future and create the architecture and the scaffolding to make that work and come alive.
And Zach, just about a minute left. How about you?
So our organization at the Community Development Corporation for U.S. Bank invests in affordable housing. We make investment in otherwise disinvested communities for economic development throughout the country, and also in the generation of renewable energy, all of which we believe advances important elements of community development. I will say our opportunity here in the region and also throughout the country is to do it, is to challenge ourselves in our industry to do it in a way that is more equitable. And I think the question is who benefits? Who benefits? Where is the wealth being created? And what are the lasting, sustaining changes that we can make? So we look forward to doing that.
So clearly both of you committed this new job of yours.
Yes.
With some expertise in the areas that you're going to be dealing with, clearly. I want to thank you so much, Rebecca Bennett. Thank you for being with us. Zach Boyers, thank you, co-chairs of the Forward Through Ferguson Commission. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.